welcome podcast listeners to the second episode in a series of three regarding wealth management for the physicianfinancial.ca page. Today, I have a pretty special guest, Dr. Magnus Breitling, who is a practicing anesthesiologist and also, I would say, an avid investor and pretty darn experienced in making and losing money. So before we get started, I kind of want to set the table for what to expect in this episode. Before me and Magnus get into a conversation, I'd like to kind of walk people into what I believe is, at least the people that are going to find this in, this episode useful, what I think they're probably have gone through or going through. So a lot of docs find themselves in a pretty high debt situation when they're either going into school and or leaving school and first starting practice. They got $50,000 in student debt, a couple $100,000 in line of credit debt. They're 29 to 40 years old. They probably feel as though they're 10 years behind most of their friends that have been accumulating financial assets for the last 10 plus years. It's pretty clear that a lot of doctors are feeling significant FOMO, especially right now. Most of their friends are doctors, dentists, oil and gas workers, government employees. And I mean, they purchased their first house. They have a couple kids. They've built up their employee and pension. So, and you're a doctor that's coming out in the hole minus $200,000. So you're at this situation where you're chomping at the bit to catch up. You're wondering, what the heck do I do now? So you kind of have to get a basis in direction. So you need to figure out where to begin. And I think, at least from all the docs that I work with or people that I chat with, or even my wife who's gone through this or is going through this right now, I mean, there's 100 questions, like which platform for retail trading? There's a million things. Should I be using mutual funds, ETFs, stocks? What is Vanguard? Who the heck is BlackRock? Should I be giving all my money to Cathie Wood? There's all these ridiculous questions. I mean, but you kind of have to get back to basics, because all of that is, at least in my opinion, something that we'll be discussing in our next episode, but also a little bit further down the road. And what I'd like to do in this episode is actually kind of dive into what I think is next after you've started your practice, you've started to earn more income than you actually need to pay yourself personally to live. Your debts are reduced to a point in which they're manageable. Maybe they're not completely done. Maybe you still have $100,000 in line of credit debt. I mean, you're only paying what? Prime minus 2.5 for that. So who cares? I mean, that's 1.8 right now, maybe 2.1. I mean, it's really irrelevant. So you're feeling comfortable there. You're making $300,000 to $500,000, $600,000 a year in your operating company, or rather your billings. And you're wondering, okay, it's time. And at this point, this is when you start to consider your corp. And I think this is pretty exciting for a lot of people. You've finally gotten to the point where you feel like you're catching your friends, you're making a lot of money, you're not using it all. So you now have this opportunity to make decisions regarding investing. So Magnus, I know that you're probably a little bit further on than most physicians that are in their late 20s, early 30s. You've paid down a significant portion of your debt. You got a house, you got kids. So would you mind at least helping people understand the first things that you did when you started to tackle the idea of incorporation?
Yeah, absolutely, Joel. Thanks very much for having me. You know, just listening to you, you know, brought back some memories of, yeah, those early years. As you know, I've been in independent practice for about 10 years. I'm in my early 40s. I have two kids. I got the house, the white picket fence, no dog, but we're working on that. You know, I'm sort of established in my sort of career, but I still remember 8-9 years ago finishing up residency and having all these questions. And, you know, having the, you know, challenge, but also anxiety of getting out from under debt, and where are we going to settle our family, and am I going to get a full-time job, and what's a local? But 10 years ago, interest rates were a little bit higher, and for me personally, just being the personality I am, I've always been sort of debt averse. I know, especially these days, you could make arguments for, well, you know, you're going to make so much more investing, you don't need to worry about paying off debt as much. And there is a balance there. But it also comes down to, you know, who you are as a person, and I was just always very debt averse. So my first priority when getting a residency was paying off that $173,000 line of credit, like your resident line of credit. That's just what I felt I needed to do before we started spending money. I think that's a generally good lifestyle to lead, especially when you're faced with suddenly making all this money. Doctors have historically been epically poor at managing money. And part of that comes from not being prepared for when your annual salary becomes your monthly salary. It's very easy to get yourself in trouble because it seems like this never-ending tap. And that ties into incorporating, because it only really makes sense if you're able to live off less than you make. So the first thing I did was just pay off debt, you know, my local money, my money from earning before I got a regular position at university, just went into the family bank account. And from there, I just paid off debt. And there's nothing wrong with that in the early years. Any good accountant will take care of your taxes that way. What did you want me to answer about what happened next, or where do you want me to expand from there?
So you've kind of discussed the debt portion, but would you mind kind of drawing out an outline for new investors, people that have kind of eclipsed that debt pay down and now are interested in opening up a corporation? Is there an operational account that people should be opening? How do they go about opening investment accounts inside their corp? What do they do with the excess money? That's where I kind of want you to build out your platform that you've kind of created for yourself.
Well, talking to, various people back in those years, it was basically explained to me, like, if you can spend less than you make, incorporating makes sense because the corporation provides you a more tax efficient vehicle for investing. And so that's what I did. And it's a pretty simple process of a business lawyer or incorporating your own company, setting up shares, and then going to the bank and showing them the articles of incorporation, and you get a bank account. And you can call it an operations account, but frankly, it's a checking account. It looks exactly the same as your checking account personally. It's just, it's got your prof corp name. So it's not complicated. It's not fancy. I chose to have my corporate and personal accounts in the same banking system because it satisfied my OCD a little, and just because switching between made it so easy, transfers were seamless, there's no fees if it's the same institution. And then within that corp, it's just basically you.com. It's a checking account and potentially a line of credit. And then if you want to start tacking on investment accounts, you can do that from there. Corporate investment accounts can be created by yourself. Or if you have somebody managing it, then they'll set up a free way of cash transfers from that to whatever platform they use for using your money. For me, my financial advisor happens to be also with my banking institution, so I can actually go and peek in with a click again to what's going on over with my corporate investments. Pretty sure I couldn't muddle with it and print it, and I'm darn sure I would never do it, but I can go in there and peek, which to me is very interesting. You set up standard accounts with your bank. It says your corp name on it, and you get a corp plastic, a debit card and a corp credit card. It's pretty simple. For what you do with that, it all depends. I mean, there is a plethora of financial advisor options out there. I initially just sort of asked around the hospital water cooler, as it were, and colleagues gave me names, and you go and meet people and set something up. It comes down to, in the end, now that I've gone through a few, just a comfort thing, an understanding thing, and a trust thing. If you have a good rapport and understand what the person across the desk from you is telling you, that's not a bad place to start. Everyone's going to be comparing, not everyone, but I think many will just sort of tout their algorithm or their gains as being industry leading and above the benchmark and what have you. But I think at the end of the day, your financial advisor should explain to you their strategy, and you should agree to it based on your personal goals and risk tolerance. And you have to have trust there that they're going to do their best to achieve that goal.
Yeah, I think that that's a a good way of painting it out. I mean, for myself, obviously I'm on one end where we are a fee-for-service advisory, but I think when you talk about having that trust, it's incredibly important for the relationship to start out with that goal-based platform where you're like, this is where we want to be in the future, and how do we go about getting there? You're making a ton of money. At the beginning, it's ultra important to recognize that saving is much more important than the return that you get. But then also, I think that one thing that has become very important moving forward is the price that you pay. And the one thing, the only thing, at least this is in my experience, the only thing that you can control for, the only free lunch in investing is the price that you pay. So don't overpay for the services that you're getting. Control for that cost, and then find somebody who you can, maybe not even, that somebody could be yourself, and you can go the route of DIY. But find yourself somebody you trust, and then that you guys are going to implement and be able to actually follow a plan over a 30-year period, because that will be much more valuable than perhaps the alternative, which is hopping around to different people constantly, because there's so much performance drag and tax drag and account fee drag and all this BS just with you being inconsistent in your plan. So we've kind of developed this basis where you have your operating account, which is basically your checkings account for your business. You have an investment account that you can open up with a brokerage like Qtrade or MD or RBC, TD, whatever. It could be an independent wealth management company. They all are brokerage enabled, and they all can be in different places. So that, I think, we get that. But what I think a lot of people need to really start to wrap their minds around is, why the hell do I open up a corp to begin with? And I think that this is the first place to start out when you start to actually have that accumulation phase where you're saving more money than you're spending, like you had mentioned. The thing that you need to really understand, and this is something that is the most expensive thing to most physicians, you have an enormously high active income. And remember the word active, because taxation is, I mean, it's what pays for our roads and our schools and our universities and our government employees. Unfortunately, whether you like it or not, it's a big part of financial planning. And the corp, the CCPC that you've created or you're looking to create, is a really interesting way of creating a self-employed pension. So I had mentioned earlier that a lot of your friends will have employee pension plans. These are when you leave the corp or you leave the company that you work for and you move on to something else. These are considered LIRAs in my world. But what you should be thinking of in regards to your account or your corporate investing account and the entity itself is that it's separate from you, but also this unique place that I consider to be this dam, this big reservoir of water or money that allows for you to control from a tax perspective, but also a cash flow perspective to you as a human being or you as the person, somebody who is separate from your practice. And inside of your corp, you have a whole bunch of benefits, but there's also a whole host of nuances. And I think what people need to realize here is that there's a bunch of things that you need to consider. You have a small business deduction or small business rate applied to your active income, and then you have a passive income rate that's applied to dividend investing and other investments that you might make separate of what your active earning income actually is. So just to kind of separate the two in regards to passive and active. Active income is your billables, your stipends. These are how you're getting paid from the university or your practice. A passive income is when you are earning dividend income with the investments you've made inside of your corporation. And those passive investments and active income, the income generated from these two, are treated differently with our Canadian tax code. And this tax code is often changing. So I want to give you a little bit of an example here. So an Alberta-based CCPC, which is basically your medical corp, that earned $100,000 in passive income. So let's say you have $1 million investment in Smart Centers REIT, or you have $1.5 million invested in Enbridge, and that dividend is 7%, well, that's going to generate darn near $110,000 in passive income. Then you also combine this reality that you have made $300,000 in active income and billables from your actual operating. Well, in a lot of cases, you have a threshold where the passive income actually reduces your active income tax rate from, so generally speaking, if you make $500,000 or less in your corp, you will have the small business tax rate applied to that income. However, when you start to integrate passive income into this scenario, you start to reduce what that passive or what that active income is taxed at because of what the government will call integrated tax system that they've applied since 2019. So what I'm trying to do here is actually create some sort of complexity for you to understand that it's important for you to realize where you're earning income inside of your corp and how you go about navigating the tax consequences of it all. So without diving too far into passive income versus active income, what I want to do is kind of move on into what Magnus has been doing in his situation. So as Magnus had mentioned, he's been practicing for nearly, 9 years now, Meg?
Yeah, 9 years.
And obviously you got kids, you got a wife, you got a white picket fence, you need to pay for stuff. So how do you go about flowing money from your corp, from your operating company, your medical professional company, your CCPC? How do you get that to yourself personally?
So, I mean, the natural logistics of it are very simple. I'll get to that, but in the end, you got to start off with a good old-fashioned budget. And, you know, it hasn't been outside of the realm of reasonable for me to just do this by hand or an Excel spreadsheet in past years. But ultimately, after you sit down with your accountant and your financial advisor, and you have your plan of, okay, we have a 20, 30, 40, whatever, your plan. We want to reach this financial goal for retirement. We want to reach this goal for our kids' school. And we want to live at this level of lifestyle. You know, you claim, you know, what kind of a car every 5 to X years, and how much do you like to eat out, and how big of a house do you want to have? Once you make all those decisions, your accountant can then reverse engineer, with taxes taken into consideration, what that's going to cost. And they will provide you with a yearly sort of schedule, depending on whether you choose dividends or salary. So it should be laid out for you, like, okay, like, if you're on salary plan, your corporation will pay this much towards those taxes owing, just like any employer does, and you, Mr. Employee, also owner, CEO of your company, will take your salary of X amount, you know, on whatever day every month. It could be as simple as that. And then you just transfer that amount of money from your corporate, you know, checking account or whatever you want to call it, into your personal account. And it's really just gets flagged, just a payroll deposit, just like if you were an employee working for whatever company. I mean, and that's exactly what it is. From there, you hopefully live on a budget. So you pay your credit cards, you pay your mortgage, you pay your utilities, go out for dinner, you make your car payment, if that's your thing, which I don't advise, by the way. And you just live a budget. So as complex as it seems, it's actually very simple. Like, it's just that you have this personal connection to your income stream that happens to be your corp. But it's no different than if you just were just collecting a paycheck from, you know, your life before medicine. So for me personally, I just, and I've had both the dividend wife income sprinkling approach, and then since the income sprinkling became, you know, tax not so advantageous a few years back, I switched to a salaried approach to get RSP contribution room back. And those are some of the nuances your accountant should discuss with you. The pros and cons of taking a salary in the form of dividends and the tax and investing implications of that compared to a salary. Like I said, I have a number that I should be taking exactly every month out, but frankly, I mentally know what I should be living at. And when I see the personal account low, I just make a transfer of $10,000 from the corp over, and I have a spreadsheet telling me how much I've taken and what not to go over every year. So mine's a little bit more fluid. I draw when I need to. I know that if I'm under X amount, which the corp has prepaid taxes for me for, then when I do my personal taxes, I'm good. And I know that every dollar I go over at my tax bracket, over what the corp prepays, half of that is taxed, so taked up. So if I go over, that's fine. There'll be a personal tax bill at the end of the year. Just know that at your tax bracket, basically it's 50-50.
Yeah, no, that's a really good way of painting the picture, I think, because it simplifies something that when you go to read about it yourself or you talk to your accountant, I mean, your eyes glaze over when they start to talk about tax. And it gets, I mean, when you go deep into the weeds, it really, I think, at least this is just my opinion here, but when you go deep into the weeds and then you really start to save and shave dollars and basis points everywhere, you start to make things incredibly complicated, stressful. It creates anxiety, and it doesn't have to be that complicated. And I think the way that you painted it was a really, really powerful way of people to picture their financial life. And what I think is different from you and perhaps those that have gone the DIY approach, it's that you've probably trusted your accountant and you've trusted your advisors to that, to kind of advise you where to go and where to live within. And then when you'd mentioned fluid, I think that that's also an important thing. A lot of us, especially I think physicians and then those that in my field really enjoy to live inside of the spreadsheet, but life isn't lived inside of a spreadsheet, and it's messy and dirty, and every month isn't the same as the last. And you had mentioned, yeah, fluidity of it. I mean, some months are super expensive and other months aren't so. And you need to recognize that, I mean, there's costs that come up that you never would have thought you were going to have, and your model breaks down. And what's most important is being able to get back to that home base and adhere to your plan. The plan is the most important. Now, what I want people to picture now is, when we're talking about him paying himself a salary, let's say hypothetically he's decided to go, he's got a salary, he doesn't have the ability to income split because his wife makes more than, let's call it, 100 grand or whatever the number would be. So now it doesn't make sense for you to pay her a salary. Well, retained earnings inside of your corp are only taxed at least in Alberta, starting this April at 8%. That is damn good versus a personal tax rate, depending on the province that you're in, from 20 to 54%. So there is a huge benefit to keeping cash inside of your corp. Now, when you go about doing all of this, I'd mentioned that finding people that you trust, I don't think it's actually possible. At least I don't advise it for physicians or people that are listening to this podcast to not have an accountant. So what should they be expecting to pay for these accounting services? At least what's your experience with it?
Yeah, okay. So one of the decisions you have to make when to incorporate is, not only are you able to spend less than you make, but you know, there's other costs associated with it. It costs some money to incorporate a business, somewhere around $1,500 to $2,000. And then every year you have corporate taxes. And these are very different than personal taxes. For corporate taxes, I know I'm going to pay somewhere around $3,000 to $3,500 a month. It's been lower and it's been more depending on what was going on in my life and with the corp less time. The more your accountants need to do stuff, generate reports, answer questions for you, you know, the more it's going to cost. But basically, for a corporation, about $3,000, and then they also do my personal taxes and those of my wife, and that's another $500 each a year. So everything is for about $4,000, and of course, that's tax deductible.
Yeah, and that's important for people to realize that professional costs or fees are deductible on your corporate tax rates. So keep that in mind. Not all professional fees are 100% a drag on your income. There are some, not necessarily benefits, but you can write off a lot of them. And that also goes for management fees in your corp too, if you were to hire an advisor. I mean, even your legal fees too. It's must be understood. Now, but
as you mentioned, corporate tax rates are very low. So it's not like you aren't paying the money for that service. You just don't pay the tax, which means at a corporate level, you save 10%. Like, it's still money out, so it has to be worth it, right? It's not free. Sure. It's just you don't pay the tax portion of it. Tax deductible on a personal level is far more relevant because of the tax bracket.
Much, much, much better.
So remember, like, you're saving 8%, not 50 if you do work. And for that, well, you should get, I mean, everything should be pretty seamless. Like, you come in once a year, sign some docs, and they should go take you through your corporation. And I mean, you'll have given them receipts for, you know, conferences and meal expenses and mileage on your car, maybe, and all your professional receipt dues. You know, depending on how you communicate with your accountant, you can set up a QuickBooks if that's your thing, and they will just get the file and know what to do with it. You know, I just created spreadsheets, Excel spreadsheets years ago, and just, you know, we print out my bank statements and just make little annotations, scan them and bring them in. That works for them. Whatever works for you that makes you able to do it, because there's nothing worse than tax time coming in at the end of the year and you have just a giant envelope of slips of paper, which is still a thing, amazingly. It can happen. So whatever gets you organized, your accountant should have to work with and, you know, come up with a successful product for you. Every year I get a sheet that says, okay, based on the way the tax rules have changed this year and tax rates, to keep in your budget, these are your numbers. And then I know how much I can take out every month and what I should need. I have to set my corp up to pay tax-wise in advance, because you are your chief financial officer. So you need to, once a year or periodically, log in and say, okay, I need to pay my employees taxes in advance. I have to make tax installments for employees. It's very simple to do. It takes me half an hour once a year to just hit, you know, change the date 12 times and set it up for the year, and you're good. But they should be able to walk you through it and explain to you what those different tax entities are. And they should be able to work with your financial advisor and understand your financial goals. If you're a financial advisor and you have decided that maximizing your RSPs is the way to go for your financial goals, then your accountant will create a payment plan taking that into account, because they know, okay, he or she can draw a whole bunch more, because there's going to be tax free money, or, you know, you're going to be able to put money into an RSP and that's not taxable, so you can be able to draw a whole bunch more, leaving less in the corp. If that's a strategy, that's fine. But if you're going to max your RSPs, you might want to hold off on incorporation. The whole point of incorporation is, the way I always remember it, is like you said, everything left over is taxed at 8%, or back when I started, 12%. So the way my accountant told me is, like, just think about what you can do. Money in your corp is 88 cents on the dollar. Like, you can invest 88 cents of every dollar's worth if it stays in your corp. You pull that personally, you're dealing with 50 cent on a dollar money. So that extra 38 cents, that can go a long way over the years. And that's the way I had it in my head. Every dollar in the corp I can keep in there, that's 88 cents worth of, or now 92 cents worth of investing power. Now, of course, with RSPs, it's 100%, and you just need to understand what's going to work for you. For me, with RSPs, the way I always had it in my head was, okay, you're saving taxes in advance to pay them later at a lower tax rate. That's the idea. But like you mentioned, if you are going from, say, you're making $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, $600,000 a year, okay, yeah, you have car payments and a mortgage, and, you know, you take putting your kids through school. Yeah, your tax bracket is going to be a lot lower when you retire. But how much? Even if you have it from 500 to 250, you're still in the highest tax bracket possible. So from a tax bracket perspective, RSPs aren't really your friend. But the tax-deferred building potential of that 100 cents of every dollar is not small. But because, especially in the corporate tax world in Alberta, that difference is 8 cents, it's almost a wash and comes down to what your strategy is.
Yeah, the tax integration, that it's by design that they've made it almost equal to be in both. Actually, quite frankly, given the current structure in Alberta and our lower general personal tax rate versus the capital gains and passive income tax rates, it's the integration is leaning towards personal versus keeping your income in your corp. So it's always changing. It's always fluid. And that's why it's so important to have a good forward planning accounting team and one that understands you, your situation. So kind of to round out this episode, I want to give a little bit of a dive into my own personal life. So as listeners may or may not know, I'm a financial advisor. I own my own corporation. It's very similar to a prof corp that a physician might have. I'm also married to an anesthesiologist who has been practicing for a year. And I think that painting this situation is, at least I think, helpful, because she had to go through that situation where she had line of credit debt, she had student loan debt. But then very early on, after graduating from residency, she started to make more money than she needed. And I'm not saying that this is the right way to go about doing it, but I kind of fell into the same, or at least she fell into a very similar situation as to yours, Magnus, where she wanted to reduce her debt income or her debt load. But we did that fairly quickly, luckily, or in a situation where that mattered. And what we've decided is that we need to have $200,000 a year in income personally, and we split that evenly. The remaining has been allocated to our corporations. Now, what I want people to understand here is once they've gone over, once we had decided that we had paid down debt sufficiently and her business costs were X and we opened up all of her corporate investment accounts, we felt as though it was imperative to max out her TFSA early. Going into her first year of into practice, she didn't even have any money in her TFSA. And most people should understand this. There's $75,500 in room as of 2021. So we decided that it was really important for us to get that full. And as you had mentioned, that also has a income tax ramifications, because that money doesn't have 100% inclusion like an RSP does. Every dollar that goes into your RSP is taxed at zero, right? Because it's a wash. A TFSA doesn't have that characteristic. So we decided that the compounding value inside of a TFSA was worth it for us to pay the tax on early. So that was the first move that we made personally versus the corp. And now that we've gotten that structured out and that we have our personal life figured out, where we've got our disability and term life insurance, we got the critical illness if you felt it was necessary, and we've got the mortgage and whatever, our costs are kind of, we figured it out. We don't need more money than what we're paying ourselves. We can start to fund our corporate investments for her. So she's paying herself a salary of $100,000. Every dollar that she makes above that, and net of taxes and business costs and insurance costs, we're putting into her corporate investment account. So I think that maybe paints a decent picture as to where you maybe want to move towards now that you're new to practice and you're making more money. If you have any questions, I really hope that you either reach out to myself or you post a question on our website or send us an email. All of that will be linked in the show notes. Magnus, we're going to be doing a second episode, so I can't wait to talk to you about that. I really appreciate you coming on, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Yeah, my pleasure.